Listeners like you make living on Earth possible each week. Please contribute today by clicking on the donate link to the left of the page. And thanks.
It's Living on Earth. I'm Steve Curwood. Well, we've arrived at the last segment of our holiday special, where we've invited Caribbean storytellers to keep us warm with their yarns about plantation ghosts and feeding the camels of the three wise men. We've also heard about the spark of a career that was struck telling stories around a Brooklyn tenement stove. Now we're joined by a performer who's made his career telling stories, reciting poetry, and generally exaggerating. Ken Corsby hails from the far reaches of the Caribbean, from Guyana, on the northeastern coast of South America. He's also lived in Barbados and now makes his home in rural Long Island, New York. Welcome to Living on Earth, Ken.
Hi, Steve. Welcome. I'm glad to be here.
Oh, thank you. Now, just tell us a bit about Guyana. I think it's a place that most of us know very little about.
Well, Guyana is actually a strange thing. Although it's on the South American coast, it's actually considered politically, culturally Caribbean islands. We call ourselves the West Indies. We are affiliated culturally, socially, politically with the Trinidad, Barbados, Grenada, St. Vincent, St. Lucia, Antigua, and not with South America, because although we're there, we never learned Dutch, which Suriname is one of our borders. Venezuela is Spanish, and we never learned Spanish in schools. Brazil is on our border, and we never learned Brazilian Portuguese. So we are really English-speaking in that sense, which is a very odd thing for people to understand, that although we're in South America, we're really part of the Caribbean islands.
How did you think about the seasons when you were growing up and when you lived in Barbados? What were the seasons there?
When I was growing up, there were four seasons. Dry season, short dry season, long dry season, short wet season, long wet season. That's it.
Okay.
That's our seasons.
Yeah.
It's nice to be in a country where the seasons are regulated. Spring, summer, autumn, and winter.
So you come all this way north. First you go north to England, and then you come to New York. In fact, you're living in New York.
Yep, right, now. That's right.
So tell me about adjusting to this country.
Now, here's the difference between living in the Caribbean and living here in northern America. My wife and I, about 7 years ago, decided to buy a house in Long Island. That was in February. I'm freezing outside, so I buy this house. In the Caribbean, I lived in my own house for about 20 years, and all I had was a handsaw, a hammer, a screwdriver, and a cutlass, which is, you call a machete. That's all. I come here to find that the things you have to get to live here comfortably are astonishing. Autumn came, and you buy rakes to rake the leaves. You have to get a ladder to get onto the roof to take the leaves off. And the winter comes, and you buy a shovel. And my wife says she has to get an ergonomic one. And you have to buy firewood, because one of the attractions in our house was this little fireplace I'd seen in so many Hollywood films. It was great. So I find out that there's a place there selling a cord of wood. Well, I don't know what a cord of wood, but it sounds good. So I order a cord of wood. Enough wood came to build a forest. A truck dumped some wood about 8 feet high and 20 feet across, filled up the entire driveway. Now we can't park our car. And then I have to buy an axe to cut the wood. Then I have to make a shed to put into which the wood must be put. And you buy a vacuum to clean the carpet, a big one. But you have to buy a small one too, for like one drop fall. You have to fall. Mm-hmm. And then you have to buy a carpet cleaner. It's another thing. We buy a humidifier that puts water into the air. Summer comes and you buy a dehumidifier that takes the water out of the air. And that is living in North America.
Ken, we've asked you on the show because we understand that you're an expert at one of the most important things about living in the Caribbean, living in the tropics, and that is eating a mango. Can we get the instructions from you?
Well, okay. Eating a mango. You see, there are four ways to eat a mango. Accredited ways. The first way to eat a mango is the natural way. You just hold it and you peel it off with your mouth, your teeth, and let the juice fall all down to your elbow, and you just twist your elbow and you lick it off. There was a friend of mine named Mark. He was an expert at that, the natural way. If the mango dropped juice fell down from his elbow onto his knee, he would bend down and lick it off. I've seen him lick mango juice off his toe. Now, don't laugh, because because eating mango the natural way like that made him an incredible storyteller. He has a tremendous body language, and he can, you know, and he got that ability from eating mangoes the natural way. So the other way to eat it is, if you go to Barbados, Grenada, you carry it and you eat the mango in the sea, the salt and the sweet, and you can toss it there, it's biodegradable, no problem. But the third way is the technological way. A friend of mine named Ricardo Smith used that a lot. What you do is you take your mango and you take a penknife or something and you slice off a large slice as far as down, as close to the seed as you can. And you flip it over and you sort of tic-tac-toe, or I don't know what you call it, crisscross it. And then you turn it inside out. So you have these little squares and you eat them. And he, Ricardo Smith, used that method. And he became very successful because he used to eat mangoes the technological way. I'll tell you why. He learned to compartmentalize his life, to have things measured exactly in its place. And now he's living in a big house on a hill in Tobago overlooking the sea. Now, the last way was you squeeze the ripe mango, squeeze it until it's soft. You nibble off a little piece in the top and then you suck it out. Squeeze it and suck it out. That was my way. And I'm not sure I can tell you what skills that taught me, but that was my way of drinking mangoes. But you know, no matter what style you use, at the end of it you have to say, this mango is sweet.
She said, you eat it right here, one stick in your teeth. And your bongo say, how it tastes is sweet, sweet, sweet. But if you eat it wrong, go walk in the street. Everybody gonna know when they see the hair in your teeth. Tell her, honey, tell me why you're forcing me. As a rule, when I done scrub me teeth, I want nothing more to eat. So she said, take it easy, Joe. It seemed to me like if you don't know. But this thing is tasting so nice. When you eat it once, you must eat it twice. Man, if you eat it right, you hear one stick in your teeth. And you're bound to say how it tastes in sweet, sweet, sweet. But if you eat it wrong, the walk in the street, Joe, everybody gonna know when they see the hair in your teeth.
We're speaking with Ken Corsby, teller of tales at Caribbean Story Festivals. Ken, you're a professional storyteller and you have several CDs. So tell me, what's your experience of how people here in the U.S. view storytelling compared to the West Indies?
They put limitations on what storytelling is. You see, for instance, I'm sitting right here in a studio and watching a tape by Spalding Gray. I see a video must be here on the desk. Spalding Gray. Great. To me, a great storyteller. But the storytelling community here tended to call him a monologist. He does monologues. He's not really a storyteller. I, for instance, I do a stand-up comedy, but it's not like the one-liners that a lot of American storytellers are great at, these one- and two-liners. They're beautiful. I tell little anecdotes, little stories, like jokes, if you wish, but they're little stories. They may last 30 seconds or a minute, but it is. And I use that technique, too, when doing storytelling. I also do what I did a lot in the Caribbean, was perform Caribbean poetry. Did a lot of poetry. And I'm not sure if they were all seen as stories unless they were strictly narrative. Here, I was told, for instance, don't act it, Ken. Tell it. You're merely a vehicle for the story. And I was saying that, you know, I'm on that stage. People watching me. So I found that tendency to want to limit you in various ways. There's an incredibly wide range of what story is now. Anything. Song. For instance, I wanted to sing a song to tell you one type of story. I could illustrate to you through song.
All right.
That I remembered a song by a friend of mine called Dave Martins. He runs a group called the Trade Winds. He lives in the Cayman Islands, where I go every year to do a festival, storytelling festival. And he told me a story in song. He said, a customer officer friend of mine was telling me recently how to tell people's nationality. Look around any airport from New York up to Belgium and you can tell what nation somebody from. If a woman wearing a sari, she from Pakistan or India. A man in a maple leaf sweater, well, he from Canada. But if you see a man with a suitcase the size of a Cadillac, you can be sure that's a West Indian going back, because you're traveling with 10 pounds of flour, 6 pints of split peas, icing sugar where any suitcase, a bag of potatoes and a big slab of cheese, bicycle tires where any suitcase. Now, the airlines in every country had to pass a regulation just to control, yes, we West Indian. 70 pounds on a suitcase, they say that is the limit. But a West Indian got that in his back pocket. Now in the USA and Canada, every time a West Indian going back, you know, it's 2 days he taking just to pack. And when the bags arrive at the airport, them skycaps is run and hide in the washroom and refuse to come outside. But when you see me traveling between the islands, you laugh until you cry. If you see the things we bring on the plane, believe me, I wouldn't lie. A bag of crabs stinking up the room, fried fish in a tin, a coconut broom, 4 breadfruit and 2 live chickens, because we travel with parts of a tractor, yes, a motor car seat too, Nike sneakers in his suitcase, yes, 2 dozen mackerel, a bag of salt beef, hi-fi speakers in his suitcase. I use a lot of Calypso songs. In fact, at the in the Cayman Islands Storytelling Festival every November, runs for 10 days on a different beach every night we go to and tell. The main feature are Trinidadian calypsonians who they bring in for the occasion, who actually sing a lot of narrative and old-time calypsos, we call them, that are very lyrical and narrative, and very funny and very witty. And one of the things they do too, in case you didn't ask, was the Caribbean poetry, which I'd like to do just one short one here.
Oh, please do.
One of the most popular, in fact, probably the most popular and prolific storyteller, dialect, poet, or call it what you will, is a man named Paul Keynes Douglas. He is Trinidadian, Grenadian. I am sometimes surprised when I, and I shouldn't be, of course, when I ask people, an American audience, who has heard of steel band, ever heard of steel band play? And if there are 20, 30 people, 5 would say, 6, I would say yes. In my ego of a Caribbean person, I say, oh, how can you not hear of steel band? How could you have not never eaten a mango? Anyhow, so how the steel band was born. Steel band, as you know, are made of oil drums. They cut down to various heights to give a high note, low note, mid note, deep note, bass notes. And steel band nowadays was started very, in inverted commas, primitively. Has ended up to be bands of 30 and 40 playing classical music. High-class classical music, and being judged by adjudicators of classical music. Anyway, how was the steel band born? I'll tell you why, how Paul Keynes Douglas says. He says, once long ago, not so long ago, and the story I'm telling is true, a man take a pan with a hammer in his hand, cool, so he invent something new. It was an ordinary drum in which the oil used to come. It didn't make no particular sound. One note, maybe two, you could beat it till you blew. That was all it could do for you. Until the man take the pan with the hammer in his hand, and he say how he understand that if the pan making one and the pan making two, then the pan can make quite a few. So the man take the pan with the hammer in his hand, and he stoop down there on the ground, and he hit it and he beat it and he stretch it and he mark it, and the pan start to make a new sound. Yes, the pan start to make a new sound. It go, ping, 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 ping. Yes, a do, re, mi, and a mi, re, do. That was all he could make it say. But it sounds so sweet, he take it on the street. It was the first time to hear Pan play. And all where he gone, the crowd got around to hear the sweet notes that he pounded. And none will forget the day that they fed the the day that the steel band was born. And since that time, all over the land, you hear the sweet sound of Pan. How they hit it and they beat it and they stretch it and they mark it like the man with the hammer in his hand. How he hit it and he beat it and he stretch it and he mark it and the pan start to make a new sound. Yes, the pan start to make a new sound. Now, what I'd like you to do, Steve, at the end of every little two lines here, I want you to say, oh yeah, like I say.
Okay.
They make a tenor pan and they make an alto pan, then they come and make a double tenor too.
Oh yeah.
They make a cello pan and they make a guitar pan. Now we're taking 60 men to make a band.
Oh yeah.
A do, re, mi, and a fa, sol, la, di, do. Ain't no place the pan can't go.
Oh, yeah.
Upper class, middle class, lower class, no class. Classics to calypso.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Born in the streets of Trinidad, it has now gone far and wide.
Oh, yeah.
And there ain't no stopping and there ain't no staying. It's a sound of a people's pride.
Oh, yeah.
So when you hear the beat of steel band in the street and the rustle of a thousand feet, remember that man with the hammer in his hand who put the first notes on a pan. How he hit it and he beat it and he stretch it and he mark it, stoop down there on the ground. How they hit it and they beat it and they stretch it and they mark it and the pan start to make a new sound. Yes, the pan start to make a new song, yeah. And the pan start to make a new song.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And oh, the pan start to make a new sound.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Ken Corsby is a storyteller who's from Guyana. He's also lived in Barbados, and he now makes his home in rural Long Island, New York. Thanks so much, Ken.
Well, it was great. Okay, all the best, Steve. Thanks a lot.
Next time on Living on Earth, in the Celtic tradition, a year is made up of two parts, the dark winter and light summer. And each season is represented by two faces of a great goddess.
In the winter, she was called the Caillach, which is a word meaning the veiled one. And her bright side, which returned when spring came along, was Bride. And Bride was the young maiden who ushers back the warm, light-filled days of the early spring.
The Caillach doesn't give up her hold on the cold, dark days easily. We'll hear her tale next week on Season of Light, a storytelling special from Living on Earth. Living on Earth is produced by the World Media Foundation. This week's holiday program was produced by Ingrid Lobet. Our crew includes Ashley Ahern, Bobby Bascom, Eileen Balinski, Bruce Gellerman, Helen Palmer, Emily Taylor, and Jeff Young. Our interns are Alexandra Gutierrez and Mitra Taj. Jeff Turton is our technical director. Allison Learish-Dean composed our themes. You can find us anytime at loe.org. I'm Steve Curwood. Thanks for listening. And happy holidays.
Funding for Living on Earth comes from the National Science Foundation, supporting coverage of emerging science, and Stonyfield Farm, organic yogurt and smoothies. Stonyfield pays its farmers not to use artificial growth hormones on their cows. Details at stonyfield.com. Support also comes from you, our listeners, the Ford Foundation, the Town Creek Foundation, the Oak Foundation, supporting coverage of climate change and marine issues, and Pax World Mutual Funds, socially and environmentally sustainable investing. Pax World, for tomorrow. On the web at paxworld.com.
PRI, Public Radio International.